On this edition of Josh Nason's Punch Out, hear from Nitro author Guy Evans about why he decided to write a book about the rise and fall of Nitro and WCW in general, what he hopes people get from the book, some surprises about the book, who he talked to, who he didn't talk to, all that and more on this edition of JMPO coming up now. Hi, everyone. This is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. Almost Christmas time. Hope you guys are getting your shopping done and all that good stuff. Speaking of shopping, I got something for you to buy. I know if you're a wrestling fan, you're listening to this, you're going to enjoy this talk with the author of Nitro, The Incredible Rise and Inevitable Collapse of Ted Turner's WCW. Author Guy Evans is on this episode of the show, and as we'll talk about, and I wax poetic about this book quite a bit on this show, it's excellent. It is really, really good. And I'm not just saying that. It is. It's really good. And I think if you're in the wrestling business, you're going to enjoy this talk quite a bit and enjoy the book. Still plenty of time to get it, e-version, physical version, all that good stuff. And look, you get you get gift cards, and you need to use it on stuff. You might as well use it on something that you're going to enjoy. And this is a thick read, man. This is 600 pages as I clanged on the desk. As you hear that, this is like thud factor, man. This is big, and it's chock full of information. And we get into that interview. So yeah, Guy and I talk for, we're going to talk for like half an hour, I was thinking. And then all of a sudden we went to like 45 minutes. So, it's a good in-depth conversation. For those of you who have read the book, I think this will provide some color to some of the things in the writing. Even if you haven't read the book, this isn't like, you're not going to get spoiled. It's weird to kind of say that with a book, that's a fiction book, or fact rather, a fact-based book, a nonfiction, if I can get that right. It's not going to spoil the experience or anything for you. And actually, as we talk about this guy, actually, there's some things he doesn't specifically tell you about because he wants you to be illuminated. I want to say surprised, illuminated later in the book. And I would agree with that. So enjoy this conversation. I enjoyed having it, something that's been built up for a while. But I'm glad we're actually finally able to get it done. So without further ado, let's get to it. My talk with Nitro author Guy Evans, and it's going to start right about now. Well, everyone, after months and months of teasing this interview and telling you how good the book was, I finally finished the book, and I'm finally on the phone with the author. Very excited for this. So I first heard about this book this summer, and earlier this year, this summer, I believe it was, and the author had emailed into our one of our distribution lists, or one of our emails, as often we get with wrestling related authors. And I was intrigued by the content, and happened to just kind of do a little bit more digging into it, and did a little bit more digging into it. And then I'm like, I think I really want to read this book. So reached out, got a press copy, and I will tell you right now, and I as I told the author before our call for our talk tonight, I enjoy this book immensely. One of my favorite books of the year, and one of my favorite books, honestly, about wrestling all time. And we're going to get into why. So I'm not blowing smoke. This is a fantastic book. It is called Nitro, The Incredible Rise and Inevitable Collapse of Ted Turner's WCW. And joining us at this time is the one and only author of that book, Guy Evans. And Guy, we'll start with the real hardball questions first. How's your holiday shopping going? You almost done?
I think it's more accurate to say that I haven't even started, Josh. It's the 19th. My style is to start thinking about it on the 23rd. So I'm kind of sit back and relaxing at the moment, knowing I've still got four more days before I have to think about it.
A man after my own heart. I like to do the same.
Yep. But I do appreciate the very kind words, Josh, and what you said there is exactly how I remember it as well. I think I sent out sort of a a brief overview of the book and what it was about to a number of different websites. And I remember that you came back fairly quickly on the reply asking for a copy. And it's been really fun over the last, I suppose, 4 or 5 months since then, just keeping up to date on your progress reading the book, because I know you really took your time in digesting this thing. And it was nice to hear, you know, as you were going through the chapters, how much you were enjoying it. So as you said, this has certainly been a long time in the making, and I'm really enjoying I really look forward to talking about it tonight.
Yeah, same here. And one thing I'm glad you did this is you insisted very politely, I must add, that I finish the book before we talk. And usually a lot of authors don't do that, but I'm glad you did, because it actually it actually made a lot of sense, because the book is, you know, obviously so good. It was just it was good that you actually had me do that, because I think sometimes maybe, you know, you talk to various authors and you're like, they skim through. We see this with interviews all the time, right? People read a mm-hmm. chapter or something like that and really don't get the sense. But I think to really kind of capture this book and this experience, you really do have to read it from cover to cover.
I think so. You know, I do remember doing an interview fairly early on in this process where it became pretty obvious to me within about 5 minutes that the person I was talking to had only just started reading the book. So I had to resist the temptation to say, in response to every question, well, you know, in chapter 10 or in chapter 15 or on this page, you're going to get an answer to that question. So that was really my motivation behind doing that. But as you said, I think this is a book, at the risk of sounding pretentious, that I think, as you said, you do have to read from start to finish, because there are a number of themes that run consistent from cover to cover that, in order for those sort of subtopics to be resolved, you do have to complete the entire book. So I'm very happy that you got there in the end.
Yes, absolutely. So let's start from the beginning. And so mm-hmm. As far as who you are and why, who mm-hmm. you are and why you decide to take on this project to begin with.
Sure. So I suppose I'll talk about the stuff that's somewhat relevant to this project. So my background is in academia, actually sport management and sports science specifically. I've been teaching courses in that area now for just over 10 years, first in the UK and then in the US since I moved here, which was 7 years ago, full time at this point now. And as part of that role, you know, I've done quite a bit of academic writing. I've contributed to some textbooks and written some, you know, rather obscure articles for a couple of publications here or there, especially when I was in the UK. So I suppose I developed my writing chops doing that, but I'd always had in the back of my mind an idea about doing kind of a passion project, just doing something that wasn't necessarily related to work, really delving into a world and exploring something that was of interest to me. And like many other people, I would assume, listening to this at the moment, you know, I was a fan, I was made a fan through the mid to late 90s boom that, you know, we all romanticize and talk about even today in 2018. And even growing up in the UK, you know, obviously the effects of that reached our shores, so to speak, as well. And I was someone who followed both the WWF and WCW very closely during that time, although, you know, as I'm sure most, if not all, UK fans listening will know, the WWF certainly had a greater footprint and presence in the UK. But I followed both organizations very closely, and it was a really big part of my life growing up, quite frankly. And when WCW went away, as I've said in some other interviews talking about this, that was more or less the extent of my interest in wrestling, to be completely honest with you. I knew instantly when it happened that things were going to be tremendously different, you know, for all the rhetoric and all the promises that this was going to lead to bigger and better things, and we were going to have the Super Bowl of wrestling and all that stuff. I just sort of instinctively knew that it was obviously the end of an era, and it was never going to be the same again. And I do remember sticking through, you know, the ill-fated invasion storyline. And then I remember watching when, you know, Vince McMahon brought in the NWO in 2002. And I think it was somewhere around there, sort of mid-2002, I just kind of checked out. And like many other people who follow wrestling, you know, you get to a point in your fandom, let's say, where you kind of move on to other things and lose interest with it. And to make a long story short, it wasn't until, bizarrely enough, late 2009 when, you know, again, I hadn't really thought about wrestling in all this time, sort of 6 or 7 years in the interim there, where I certainly didn't follow it very closely. And it was around late 2009, I got an email one day from a friend, and he said, hey, you should check this out. I know that you were a big, you know, wrestling fan back in the day, and there's this kind of upstart promotion called TNA Wrestling, and, you know, it looks like they're There's rumors that they're going to sort of have a resurgence of the Monday Night Wars. They've signed Hulk Hogan and some of the old, you know, characters,
yep.
On and off screen are involved again. And I thought, isn't this interesting? You know, it's such a, you know, at this point, a different time, different circumstances, very different conditions. And it seems like an attempt to recreate history. So again, to wrap up, you know, and I apologize for waffling on, to answer your question, it was at that time really where I started kicking around the idea of doing something like this, because it really got me thinking about wrestling again and WCW specifically.
And then from there, so you start thinking about this and so obviously with any type of wrestling related mm-hmm. content project, be it audio, the written word, you know, everything in between, there's a lot of different things you could tackle. Why did you decide to start with this maybe I'm answering my own question. It's a very transformative period, being the creation right. of Nitro and then the eventually the end of the company.
Well, I suppose what happened, Josh, again, just to sort of continue on my last answer, you know, at that point, 2009, 2010, I started to pay attention again. You know, I watched pretty closely during the short-lived, second Monday Night Wars. And, you know, it was at this point that I really started going back and watching some of the old footage and reading some of the books and watching the DVDs and so on that deal with the WCW story. And I think I found them all to be very informative and very entertaining and very useful in a number of ways. But I sort of had this, this nagging feeling that there was possibly a richer and deeper story out there that could be told. And at the very least, a very different story, because I thought, you know, this was before the network, but I sort of thought, well, you know, the shows happened. A lot of the footage, even by this point, is out there. People can go back and watch the shows if they want to. There are an innumerable number of websites that, you know, review these old shows and really dissect the week-to-week content. So I don't really think, that it would sort of be in my best interest to do that. But I thought, you know, all of this stuff happened during a very interesting time period in regards not only to wrestling, but entertainment and pop culture in general. You look at the media landscape back then compared to what it is now, and it's just so interesting to analyze the changes. And then, of course, the dynamic between WCW and its parent company. I thought that this is something that previously has been touched on, has been alluded to, has been discussed to some extent, but I thought that's probably where a large part of the new content, if you were to deal with this subject, would come out from. And, you know, as some people and probably a lot of people listening to this will know, and again, not to skip ahead here, but in the end, I ended up interviewing over 120 people, people who work for WCW specifically, and also people who work for its parent company, TBS. And, you know, in terms of new content, you know, and exploring that dynamic, as I said, between the wrestling division and its parent company, that's probably the most gratifying thing that people have said about this book, is just, you know, we kind of assumed that this was a story that had been discussed and tackled to death. And, you know, it seems like people are very sort of overwhelmed with the amount of new information that's come out in this book.
And that's the, you know, I think that's the thing that makes this book stand out from so many other wrestling books I've read, including obviously Brian Alvarez's book about death of WCW, the stories I've been told about everything like this and, you know, you mentioned that, and that was one of the things I wanted to go to next, was you talk to so many people, and not just, you know, I think with wrestling books, or really with a lot of sports books in general, is that they talk to some, you know, high level people. They may talk to a general manager. They may talk to a former owner or journalist or something like that. It's kind of, and then obviously they may talk to the main focus of a book, if it's a biography or, you know, something along those lines. Right. I think we kind of know what I'm getting at there. However, the reason I think this book works so well, at least it did for me, and I think for other people that, especially if they're subscribers to our website, they're into the business, and this is why I really think sets this book apart, is you talk to the most important people, who are the people on the front lines and also in the trenches, the people that make this thing move day to day to day. And often when it comes to pro sports, having worked in pro sports myself for a good 7-year stretch, it's those people that make the machine run that really understand the day-to-day of what happens and the rise and fall of certain things like that. And that's what I think makes this book so superior, is that you talk to all those people. Some were off the record, but the vast majority were on the record, cited, and not just for a quote in the book, but for passages throughout the book. And you would come back to certain people over and over again. And it wasn't, it wasn't a bitter people. It wasn't, like they were, you could tell like it was the people, it's almost like everything just happened yesterday, the way that they were describing certain scenarios and the different levels up and down. So that's one of the things that I implore people to that are interested in the subject matter to read this book, is you get that level of detail from people that are actually tasked with doing a lot of these things. Not, and you also talk to guys like, Kevin Nash and DDP and Eric Bischoff, we'll get to in a minute, and so on. But I think it's those day-to-day people. That's really what made this story kind of just feel complete to me.
Yeah, and I would add to that as well, and people perhaps have heard me talk about this in other interviews, but I was lucky enough to have access to a lot of company records and materials and memos and documents and things of that nature that haven't been seen by anyone outside the company in the time since WCW closed its doors. So that enabled me in many cases to cross-reference some of the recollections and the anecdotes and the stories that people were telling me with actually some objective data, some facts and figures, some statistics that would actually allow me to ascertain the veracity of certain claims. And, it's not as if everyone that I spoke to found their way into the book. There was probably half a dozen people, a small minority, but significant enough, who, it became fairly obvious early in the process of speaking with them that, a lot of things that they were claiming and saying weren't entirely accurate, and perhaps in some cases designed, to make themselves look good at the expense of other people. And so, it's not as if, whatever someone would throw out there goes in the book. But to your point about speaking to such a wide variety of people, I really went into this, Josh, with the mindset that it would be intellectually dishonest of me to write a book about WCW without speaking to as many people as possible who are actually there, both who work for the company and also for TBS, as I mentioned, because the way I looked at it, I think, was somewhat of a realistic approach in terms of, I've never worked in wrestling. Obviously, I didn't work for WCW. So who cares what I think? If I was going to put together a book sort of centered around my opinions of here's what they did great and here's what they didn't do great, I don't think that would be particularly interesting. So the mindset was, let's go to the source. Let's talk to as many people as possible. Let's talk to a lot of the decision makers, a lot of the people who are in the key meetings, who are making the big decisions about WCW, and let's see where that leads me. I didn't go into this with a preconceived idea of, well, here is my premise. I'm going to write a book about this, and then I'm going to find as many tidbits that are going to agree with my perspective. I think that's also, something when you're writing a sort of nonfiction book, that's a perilous approach to take. So I really did start from scratch, start from a blank canvas, so to speak. It was an approach based around interviewing people, collecting data, cross-referencing those things, filtering out, as I mentioned at times, perspectives that weren't particularly factual, and then developing the book from there. And it's a much more time-consuming and effort-intensive process to do it that way versus what I described earlier, developing a premise and then trying to find stuff that goes along with that. But I think the outcome certainly makes the book in large part.
So going to all these people that you talk to, I think we're used to, especially in business in general, not just wrestling business in general, it can be tough to find, tough to get that way in, to get people to talk, access the documents you mentioned that are referenced in the book, and, provide a lot of the color and some of the background, some of these, kind of the small pebbles between the big rocks, I think, that most people understand, but all these kind of small pebbles in between really kind of just, build this whole wall, so to speak, with, what the WCW experience was like. So when it comes to kind of like the spider web, right, of all these people you talk to, was your first person that you did, obviously you had to find the one person to kind of start with that helps open things up, was that Neil Pruitt? Or, because I know, looking at the acknowledgments, you mentioned him right off the bat. Did you start with him, or did you meet someone else and they said, yeah, I can introduce you to these people or these people? Or kind of take us through how that worked.
You know, it's an interesting question. It really was kind of a domino effect is the way that I describe it, whereby the more people that I spoke to, the more people I was subsequently introduced to. And I think once the word got around within this community of former employees, who many of them still very much keep in touch with each other, once word got around that there's someone writing a book about WCW, and it seems as though, you know, they're really interested in, as I talked about earlier, talking to the people who are actually there, and someone who doesn't seem to be going into it with a preconceived idea or particular agenda. You know, I think that in and of itself opened more doors. I will say that Neil Pruitt, who many people will know as the voice of the NWO, feature producer with WCW for many years, you know, he was instrumental in terms of really being a big supporter of the project, which is quite ironic when I think back on my first interaction with him, because as with everyone else that I reached out to for this book, you know, I did it on a cold call basis. Basically, I didn't have any sort of initial contacts or communication with any of the interviewees. So I remember speaking to him, and as I'm sure you know, Josh, you know, when you're making a call like that, you've pretty much got 10 or 15 seconds to get your point across. And I could tell, you know, there was a lot of he was very hesitant, let's say, to sort of engage with this idea, and he wasn't sure about it at all. And I think I said, well, look, you know, before you hang up the phone, basically, let me just shoot you an email with, you know, a more developed idea of what I'm doing here, and perhaps some bullet points on what I'd like to talk to you about. And it's quite funny looking back on that. That was almost 3 years ago. And, you know, Neil and I have developed a great friendship since then. And as I said, he was a huge supporter of the concept, and he was very helpful in terms of understanding why the process was taking so long as well. Because, you know, as some people listening to this probably know, there were a couple of dates that were out there as far as where the book was coming out. And there was just so much information and data coming in at all times that I had to sort of push back the release a couple of times. But you know, he was certainly a huge help in that regard.
One of the centerpieces of the book is Eric Bischoff, and centerpiece in terms of the one of the subject matter experts you talk to. And it's, you know, it's fascinating because I think so many people are associate Eric with being a bullshit artist, to put it bluntly. A lot of people don't like him. Some people do like him. There's people in between. What I thought was interesting is I'm reading through this. I tended to believe him in most cases. I mean, there are some situations where, you know, he'll tell a story, or he may, you know, disagree with someone else's recollection of certain, you know, key events, or, you know, vice versa. But for the most part, you know, he comes off as executive in this giant company, and a company that obviously got a little bit more complex when, you know, things like standard and practices got involved. And you know, he started to have more insight in that this, you know, this wrestling thing that no one seemed to like, that was over here, he started to make big success. And then people, you know, they're riding lightning. And then all of a sudden, you know, they wanted to ask more questions. And, you know, that's when things, to him, it seemed to kind of, you know, fall apart a bit. And I was interested in, you know, your conversations with him, obviously reaching out to him about that project and that, you know, that 15-second pitch. And, you know, obviously he was a key component of the book, and I think someone that helped to provide a lot of depth to color and insight.
Yeah. And I'm tremendously grateful to him and everyone for that matter, who gave up their time to be interviewed for this book, because you have to really think about, you know, what incentive do they have in speaking to someone who hasn't written about the subject before, never worked in the industry. It would be very easy to just to dismiss that. But I think when I reached out to him, one of the things I tried to get across, again, as I talked about earlier, is if I'm going to discuss his tenure at WCW, and obviously if you look at the WCW story as a whole, that involves a lot of things that were very positive for the company and positive for the wrestling business, and by the same measure, a lot of things that obviously weren't. So if I'm going to touch on those things, I think at the very least I could do is actually reach out to him for comment. And, you know, my attitude was it would be, you know, a bad thing if he says no, but at least at least he is not in a position where he can say, you know, no one reached out to me to talk about the book. So obviously, you know, when I spoke to him, we spoke over the course of 2 days, and I think he gave me about 4 or 5 hours of his time, which, again, you know, I was so grateful for. And there were times where, you know, we touched on things that that obviously, again, don't necessarily portray him in the most positive light. There are other things that he was thrilled to talk about. But I think, you know, regardless of sort of fans' opinions on him, I do think one thing we could probably agree on is, if you look at his response to the book, and again, I do want to emphasize to people, and you know this, Josh, from reading the book, there may be some people listening who haven't read the book. If you look at this book, the Nitro book, you'll see that, again, there are some things that showcase him in a very good way. And there are some things that I think he himself has said were very, very difficult to read. And, you know, I think, again, one thing that we can probably agree on is that's a pretty commendable stance to take, because if you think about, Josh, if someone was writing a book about an organization that you were a central part of, and a large part of that narrative touched on you specifically and highlighted in many cases some of your professional and even personal faults, you know, would you or would we, if we were put in that same situation, have that same same reaction to it? So, you know, I had the chance to speak with Eric Bischoff very briefly at the StarCast event. He had some very, very nice things to say that I appreciate. Obviously, I don't know the man, but, you know, again, I think that's something that should be highlighted is I don't think necessarily everyone would look at a book like this in the same way that he has.
In thinking through the book, and basically a 600 page book, and last week's show I set it down on the desk for effect, just the thud factor is tremendous. Right. I'm trying to think back. Did you find there specific, I don't want to say plot threads, but like stories or kind of like major linchpins that you had a lot of people disagreeing on what the actual facts were? I mean, obviously there was, I'm thinking that the first thing that kind of comes to mind, this is more business sense, but you go into detail a lot about the AOL and Time Warner merger and the road to that, and the very messy road and the road that eventually see Ted Turner become a vice chairman and kind of just get, you know, pushed off the side. But kind of this, that was one of the other things that I really enjoy as well, is that you took this path, and it was kind of like you know, if you watch a TV show or a movie and all of a sudden there's this little seed that's planted over here and you're like, what does this have to do with the main plot? But eventually, you know, you kind of come right back around to it. It's like it sprouts and it's like, oh, wow, it's because of this and this and this. And it's like, oh, this completely makes sense because in the end, these decisions and help, you know, lead to this other decision and so on. Did you find any stories kind of along the way that you had a lot of people, I guess, recalling their own version of things, and it was tough to kind of find where the actual facts were?
Oh, definitely. And I'm really glad, by the way, that you highlighted what you just talked about, because that was something that was deliberate in putting together this book, in terms of, you know, sometimes taking a little time out from the main narrative to kind of sprinkle in something that's going to be important later on. So I'm really glad you picked up on that. But absolutely, when you speak to over 120 people, obviously you're not going to have total agreement between those people. And when you speak to people about particularly controversial or significant events, everyone invariably is going to have their own nuanced perspective on what actually happened. So I think, as you were saying that, what it made me think of was actually putting together the chapter that's all about the events that led up to WCW being canceled from the Turner Networks.
Yes.
Because that was probably the toughest chapter to write in terms of sorting through the timeline, sorting through people's recollections of what went down, comparing that to some of the media accounts at the time, comparing that to some of the internal company documents that I had from that time. And, you know, I live here in New York, and I specifically remember when I was putting together that chapter, just having to leave my desk and go for a walk and just walking through the streets of Manhattan, just trying to figure out, you know, okay, where am I up to? Where do I need to go from here? You know, am I taking into consideration all of the perspectives I possibly could? Is there something along the way that I forgot about? So it was definitely a mental exercise, and that's one of the most rewarding things about doing something like this is, you know, you sort of feel like once you put something like that together, there's just such a sense of pride, and you know, it's definitely made me keen on writing about wrestling further in the future.
So the one of the more fascinating things are about the book, there's a lot, but the beginning of the end, and really the beginning of the end could be a lot of different points, but the Fuchsant chapter, kind of like near the end where you have this group that potentially could save the day with Eric Bischoff involved. There was there's an interesting character. It is a woman. I cannot remember her name. I believe she was involved in the music business.
Lenita Erickson.
Yeah. And I had not heard that name before. She kind of like, this character kind of comes out of, a fiction book, but it's this person comes in. It's like, and everyone, it seems like there's interest in taking over the company and kind of these, Brad Siegel's involved and there's these, different factions almost. And then this group Fuchsant, and then kind of just how this fascinating passage about essentially how WWE ended up getting the company and some questions about, some fraternity ties that may have led to this. And, people that obviously have read that can understand, can obviously remember that, but people that don't will kind of understand or read that whole part. It's just that whole kind of end was very fascinating, leading into, of course, the final event at Panama City and, everyone being very sad, not really knowing what's going on. And also, at the very end of the show, essentially the last 15 minutes or so, their control ended and WWE's took over. And that you mentioned that, they had all these, TNT, TBS employees, WCW employees there. And essentially, they're like, why are all these WWE people here? They're afraid we're going to, go rogue for the night. And just to kind of like the control was over. So I kind of got long winded there, mm-hmm. but that whole kind of end of the beginning or the beginning of the end rather was, it was sad in a way. Cause it was just like, you remembered that. And then it was like, it's over just like that. It's done.
Yeah. And the lady that you mentioned there, Lenita Erickson, I cannot tell you how many emails I've got on that particular subject since this book came out in July.
Yeah, yeah.
This almost every other day I get an email with the heading Lenita Erickson with an exclamation mark or, a question mark, and people wanting to know more about that. And that was something that, when I was putting together the book, I was very excited to throw in something like that I knew hadn't been talked about before, at least to any appreciable degree, because obviously it sort of caught a lot of people off guard. But I specifically remember talking to her and, after sort of establishing, I suppose, what the book was about and everything else, she said something to the effect of, well, it's been 15 years, I think it was at that point, I think it was 2016 that I spoke to her initially, made first contact, and she said, I'm ready to, I've got nothing to lose at this point, I'm ready to put it out there and tell you some really mind-blowing, information. And obviously the role that she plays, as you mentioned there at the very end, is pretty fascinating. But a couple of characters that I think people might be interested in terms of being aware that they are interviewed as well. Jamie Kellner, first of all, who's infamous, obviously, for mm-hmm. pulling the plug, let's say, on WCW. You'll hear comments from him in the book. And again, that goes back to, I suppose, the philosophy of putting together this book in the first place, which is, well, if Jamie Kellner supposedly had this personal distaste and hatred for wrestling, the very least we could do is speak to Jamie Kellner and ask him to comment on that. And then, it's up to the readers to make up their own mind from there, which I think, people reading the book are capable of doing. But at the very least, it would be nice to hear from him if possible. And obviously, in some cases, that isn't possible. You can't approach this with like a utopian mindset that you're going to get 10 hours with every single person who ever worked there. So you've got to be realistic about it. But another name as well that people might find interesting who is interviewed for the book is Stuart Snyder. And certainly there's been a lot of conjecture and commentary over the years as to his role in the cancellation and then subsequent quick sale to the WWF. So I was able to speak with him for the best part of an hour and actually directly put forward these claims to him and sort of make him aware this is what's been said. This is the sentiment that's out there. And I'd like you to sort of directly respond to that. And so, again, people can read what he says in the book and contrast that with what other people say in there and develop their own idea from there.
I think some of the key takeaways I had from the book was, that they're really, I think forever I'd kind of been not under the assumption, but just kind of the mindset that, Eric Bischoff blew it, that he got too power hungry and too you know, too in love with the NWO and just, you know, completely got away from the fact that there's a WCW brand that he's trying to build and was actually hurting it by the focus on the whole NWO thing. But, you know, I think one of the key takeaways I have is that, at least to me, there wasn't really like, I don't think Eric Bischoff killed WCW. I don't think Vince Russo did. And we haven't even mentioned Vince Russo yet, but that's a whole, you know, fascinating, you know, several chapters of the book that kind of deal with the Russo era, how he worked with Bischoff, his issues, really that just started like from day one in getting there and just, you know, the faith that some people put in him. I don't really think it was one person that killed it. I think it was just it seemed to be like an avalanche of all these different things from the, just obviously the NWO stuff we mentioned from storyline and the creative, but also things like, you know, the amount of TV they were putting out there, the fact that there was just so much, spending of money. There was one of the shoots that, I believe it was a graveyard shoot with Vampiro that you talked about in the book. You talked to it. I believe it was a set designer, someone involved with that. And basically he was like, long story short, it's basically they wasted like $70,000 on a something that was eventually canceled. Then they had to do a reshoot later, and just they were kind of just like the guys, like almost like you could see him shrugging his shoulders, like I don't know, we're spending money on this stuff, we're actually not even using it for anything, and right. You know, the guaranteed contracts and all this stuff, and just, you know, we talked about Siegel and Snyder and Jamie Kellner and all these different things. It seemed like to me there's just a lot of things that contributed to the end. Was that your at the end of this, was that kind of one of your takeaways as well, or do you see it a little bit differently?
No, I would tend to agree with you on that. Generally speaking, again, as you were saying that, it got me thinking about something that I think is very important that's noted in one of the final chapters of the book, which is essentially giving readers an idea of some of the motivation behind why WCW was canceled. Because again, I think the way that it's been seen in the past is, you know, this future media ventures came into play. Everything was going to be great. WCW was at least going to exist in some form or fashion for years to come. And then this guy came in who said, you know, this wrestling stuff is garbage. Get it off my networks. But, you know, one of the things that the book talks about is a key provision or a key condition as part of the Fusion purchase agreement, which actually made Kellner's decision a lot easier for him and enabled him essentially to do two things. One, kicking off the rebranding efforts for TNT at the time. Of course, they became the Drama Network and TBS, the Comedy Network, and also eliminating essentially WCW's losses through a process called purchase accounting, which, right. You know, we probably don't have time within the context of this interview to go into, but that's something that the book talks about as well. So whenever I think about, you know, what was it eventually that caused the programming to be canceled and then obviously the sale to be engineered to the WWF, I think what you've kind of got to do is start at the end and then work backwards. You know, if this provision was not in the contract, which obviously I'm not going to talk about on this interview, you have to read the book to find out what it is. But if that wasn't in there, maybe, you know, Jamie Kellner would have given that decision a little bit more thought. You know, we can at least speculate on that. But because that was in there, again, that made possible some outcomes that TBS were very much looking forward to looking to accomplish. But I know what you're getting at in terms of your question, because I think, you know, all of us who are fans back then, obviously the first thing we think of when we think of any wrestling company, you think about the on-screen product. And, you know, you can go back on the network and it's obviously a subjective thing, but you can perceptibly see the decline in WCW's product, especially the last couple of years. You know, the energy level, the way that the shows were being presented in terms of a visual product on television, obviously the insane storylines and changing the world heavyweight title every 5 minutes. And we could go on and on and on. And all of those things have been documented very well, you know, in other places. But I think you have to frame that around a larger context of what was actually going on within the corporate entity that ultimately had the final say over what happened with WCW. Because, you know, this wasn't sort of an independent wrestling promotion where their success or lack thereof is going to be sort of, you know, mostly dependent on the actual wrestling product that they're putting out there. It was a much more multifaceted situation than that. And I think that's something that people have hopefully taken away from the book as well.
We'll round the bend with a few more questions. Is what you mentioned in the acknowledgments that Bradley Siegel is one of the few people you did not get a chance to talk to that you would have liked to originally had agreed, and then some lawyers got in the way and decided not to let that happen. I was also curious, did you try to reach out to Bill Goldberg and talk to him for the project?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think if I was to go back, and I could tell you with almost 100% certainty that I did. I don't remember at exactly what point. It could have been very close to his return with the WWE, actually, now that I think about it, which may have been a roadblock. The Brad Siegel one was interesting because, as you alluded to there, I actually spoke to him on the phone about the project, and I know from a very reliable source that knows him very well that he was asking questions about the status of this book as recently as, you know, a month before it came out. So it's definitely been on his radar since then, and he was aware of what was going on. He initially agreed, and then once I indicated to him that I thought it was important that he go on the record with a lot of his comments, just because there had been so much conjecture and talk about his role in the whole downfall of WCW. I felt it was really important to get him quoted in a number of different areas, and I could tell on the other end of the line his tone of voice, you know, changed pretty abruptly at that point. And I won't bore people with the details, but you know, to make a long story short, that one ended up being a non-starter, which, you know, I'm past it now, but for a while I was pretty regretful that, you know, did I have to sort of go in that direction in speaking with him, or was there some other information, you know, that could have been gleaned from maybe speaking on background only or off the record? But, you know, that you're going to have that, I think, with any sort of project that you embark on. It's just, again, going back to sort of framing it in a realistic way, I think.
Was there anyone else that you tried to get that you were disappointed that you did not get?
Well, obviously the ultimate dream would have been able to get Ted Turner, you know, himself.
Yes.
That was a pipe dream. That's something that I can assure people, I really did go down every avenue possible to make that happen. You know, I spoke to his publicist. I spoke to some of his assistants. I spoke to longtime friends. I spoke to people who worked for TBS for decades and tried to get a read on what was going on. You know, unfortunately, I think now it's become public about some of his, very unfortunate medical concerns. But the sense that I got was, you know, this is something that's kind of been going on for quite some time. And, you know, that was a reaction I remember of one person specifically. And this was a while ago that, you know, I'm not sure if that's going to be, something that's going to lead anywhere just because of some of those things going on. But, you know, I did get a quote in there from one of his representatives that's included in the book as well, where, you know, they speak sort of about his fondness for WCW and things like that. So that would have been, of course, the ultimate dream. But I think, that ship has sailed, unfortunately, and I would be stunned if ever he would avail himself in the public eye to talk about it again. So that was unfortunate, but again, you know, I think there's enough there in the book that it makes up for it.
Yeah, I was gonna say before we even started talking about that, I wrote down Ted Turner because, as a pure coincidence, as strange as life is, Ted Turner, you know, this book comes out this year, and you know, just a few months ago, Ted Turner having his health issues. It's kind of just weird how life works like that, you know.
Yeah, and it was very sad to see. I'm not sure if you saw the piece. I think it was a 60 Minutes piece, if memory serves. I could be wrong, but the retrospective that they put together along with an interview with him currently. But just when you see that old footage and you see what a trailblazer he was in the media industry, and that's something else that was really a big positive of putting together this project. Is this is going to sound like kind of an abstract thing to say, I suppose, but when you do something like this and you really get to know, at least from your vantage point, you get to know, or you think that you get to know people who were heavily involved in the story, and you really start to get a sense of, you know, their character traits and what drove them and what was important to them and perhaps what some of their weaknesses are as well. And you sort of develop a certain fondness for them. And that's something that happened the more that I got into the process of writing this book. in regards to Ted Turner. You know, the more people I spoke to get some insight on who he actually was and what was it that enabled him to reach the heights that he did, what was it that occasionally, or some people would say frequently, made him sort of spout off with these spontaneous comments and ideas that some of them were brilliant, others not so much. So that's another, I suppose what I'm trying to say is that's another side benefit of doing something like this is you learn a lot about influential people and things sometimes that you can actually take from their life and sort of apply in your own life as well. So, you know, regardless of how history looks back on Ted Turner, you know, you look at today's landscape and I don't think you can really really compare him to anyone today. I mean, he was a maverick in the truest sense of the word. And as I think I wrote in the book, you know, I regard his story to be a very American story in terms of the things he was able to accomplish in the way that he did. So, you know, it's very, very sad to see that he's in poor health at the moment.
Yeah, for those people that, you know, are looking to get even more kind of details about his involvement in wrestling, what he meant, obviously the book, as we talked about, but Dave Meltzer talked ad nauseum about Ted Turner about a month ago or maybe 2 months ago, whenever the news came out on two separate episodes of Wrestling Observer Radio, Dave talked about his influence and obviously his works as kind of some, you know, some added detail to what Guy writes in the book. Final question. So, you know, when these type of projects, you know, I think anyone that's done any type of writing before and journalism, anything like that, sometimes you try to go into these things with an open mind, but sometimes you have a, you know, as you mentioned, you went into this trying to wipe your mental slate clean, so to speak, and not go in with a preconceived notion trying to prove a theory. I think, you know, in journalism, you write stories, you interview subjects, you kind of have an idea in your mind sometimes, fair or not, that of what your angle is. But obviously, you know, you talk to people and you realize, huh, maybe this was not the case after all, and you learn something. That's good. Were there any big things or like going into this project that you're like, I think I know this for sure. And at the end of this whole process, you're like, I guess I didn't know this after all. My mind's completely changed.
Absolutely. And I will say to your point there as well, and actually you mentioned Neil Pruitt before. Neil and I had a conversation about this recently. You know, you have to sort of cloak this whole discussion, I suppose, with the understanding that, you know, anyone who writes anything, of course, it's impossible to 100%, you know, eliminate any sort of biases or sort of leanings that you may have internally, but you've got to sort of consciously remind yourself not to do that. But to go to your question, I would say the nature in which WCW's financial performance was actually calculated, that was something that going into this, I thought, well, this is going to be more of kind of like a sidebar. You know, it's going to be sort of a reportage of, well, here's what happened in this particular year, here's what happened in the next year and so on, in terms of how much money did the company make or how much money did it lose. And as I really started to go into that and speak to a lot of the financial people who are in many cases, you know, putting together the financial statements, some of which that I have with me, and in many cases, you know, dealing with obviously the most important part of WCW's business, which was the actual finances of it, it really became clear to me that this was a much more convoluted, complicated process than I was previously aware of. And there's a particular chapter in the book, it's chapter 9 of the book, which is called An Age-Old Problem. It's chapter 9 of 56, believe it or not. And it really goes into, I think, you know, a very good amount of detail about why it really is important to take a lot of the raw reportage on WCW's financial performance with a grain of salt, to say the least. And, you know, again, I've seen, you know, some of these financial statements, and you immediately pick up on the fact that there are a number of important revenue items that are not reported on that particular statement. There are a number of expenses that you would associate with WCW that are not on that statement. You know, as many people have identified, including Eric Bischoff, WCW was part of a line item that was labeled other on the TBS book. So it was very easy, inherently to sort of shift revenue and expenses around. Also, there was a big issue with, and again, other people have talked about this, but we go into it in quite a bit of detail, intercompany charges and intercompany allocations where, it was certainly possible for both income or both revenue and expenses to not be reported in a way that was accurate in terms of what division was responsible for it, and a number of other things that chapter talks about as well. Just to wrap up, I suppose that the best illustration of this is, we've heard the famous story about the first year WCW was profitable, which is in 1995, but actually, if you actually dig into that and you look at the sort of full nature of its performance in that particular year, you'll see that that's not strictly true either. It's true based on a certain methodology of accounting, but it's not actually true when you factor in things like interest and taxes and depreciation, amortization, and things like that. But probably going into too much detail, for this podcast. But chapter 9 is definitely a chapter that I'd recommend on this subject. Mm.
I'd recommend all the chapters, people. Read them all. So before we let you go, we'll give you the chance to channel your inner Dave Penzer and tell people and where they can not only preferred method for buying the book and also interact with you in social media and all that good stuff. The floor is yours.
Well, first of all, Josh, I do want to say I'm very appreciative of your time tonight, and also obviously the amount of time you devoted to really reading this book carefully and digesting it over many months, and I truly appreciate that. And I do want to say to people listening as well, the reaction, the response to the book has totally blown me away. I had no idea that it was going to have the impact that it did. And again, the things that people have written in and commented on social media and so forth has really been very, very kind. And there's so many, you realize there's so many nice people out there, when you put your heart into something and you produce something that people enjoy, what you get back is very, very gratifying. So I do want to say thank you for thank you to everyone because of that. Now, in terms of where to get the book, there's two places, basically. You can go to wcwnitrobook.com, which is pretty easy to remember, wcwnitrobook.com. You can get the paperback version there. You can actually get a signed paperback at the moment, or you can get the ebook version. And we actually ship worldwide, so it doesn't matter where you're listening to this, you can get the book there. Alternatively, you can go on Amazon, amazon.com, or any of the derivatives, the UK, Amazon, Canada, Australia, etc. You can check out some of the reviews on that page, and you can order the book again in Kindle format or paperback directly from there. So wcwnitrobook.com or Amazon is the place to get the book. And again, Josh, I just want to say I really appreciate your time and everything you said about the book.
Well, I'll tell you what, and I'll tell you again. So privately on the air, staring at the book right now. This is just excellent. Excellent book. If you're into wrestling business, just understanding stuff. I mean, this is like candy. This is like wrestling porn, if that makes any sense. It's really good. It is really, really good. And I'm looking forward to reading this at some point again in the future, because it's, you collect all this information in and you go with such so much detail. It's good to kind of be like, okay, you read it once and now you read through it again. It's like, oh yeah, I may have missed this, or this is how this ties in and so on and so forth. This is excellent work. And earlier in the interview, I heard you allude to there may be another potential wrestling project maybe down the road. Obviously, writing books is a very tough thing. You spent several years doing this, but it sounds like you may not be done with this wrestling authorship thing, huh?
Yeah, certainly there's a few ideas, I've kicked around over the last few months, and a lot of people have written in saying you need to write about this subject or another that relates to wrestling. And so I'm at the point now, Josh, where I think I can confidently say there will be something else out there. Certainly I don't want to sort of make any projections as to when, but there are some things brewing in the background. So this is definitely a subject that I'd like to write about again, just because I think it's just such a fascinating world. And when you really think about the dynamics at play in terms of what makes wrestling actually work and some of the characters involved and the uniqueness of the business, and the respect that I have for people who are part of the business as well, it's just a world that, from the outside looking in, as a fan and now as someone who's got to know many of these people, I just find very, very interesting. So yeah, I can tell you with pretty much 100% confidence that there will be something else out there in the future.
Excellent. Nitro, the incredible rise and inevitable collapse of Ted Turner's WCW. Pick it up for the wrestling fan in your life this Christmas season, or just for yourself. Do something nice for yourself. Guy Evans, glad we finally made this happen. Thanks so much. And again, congratulations on this book. This is excellent.
Thank you, Josh. Appreciate it.
All right. Big thanks to Guy Evans for dropping by. You can obviously buy the book on Amazon, WCW Nitro book, as he mentioned. He did not plug Twitter, which I'll do for him, WCW Nitro on Twitter. Certainly check, check him out. Let him know if you like the book, if you've already read it, if you plan on buying it, if you heard him here and this kind of pushed you over the edge, let him know. I appreciate that. Again, I don't get anything from this as far as like, you know, affiliate revenue, anything like that. But, if you hear this interview and this is like the reason that you're going to buy something or you really liked it or what have you, I appreciate that feedback as well, because that helps me kind of determine future authors that we have on the show. So looking forward to you enjoying the book. And again, if you're into wrestling stuff, definitely pick that up. Ebook, physical book, all that good stuff. Check it out either now or before Christmas. Let's see. Well, thank God there's no UFC or MMA this weekend with the glut of shows that we've had the past few weeks. I finally have caught up on Bellator, most UFC. I think Bellator, I'm still behind in the weekend before. It's just, there's so much stuff right now. It's hard to keep track of, and just so much that ultimately doesn't seem to matter, you know, but it's just kind of there. And, yeah, it's crazy, man. Like, and I didn't even mention like WWE stuff, and it's just, you know, it's, I think 2019, we'll get to talk about more about the year ahead, in a future episode, but you know, I think we are getting to the point now where, you know, there's all these different streaming services and all this different stuff available. Eventually, mentally, I think we're going to be like, okay, we're all set, and we're going to pick and choose more than ever before. And, you know, certain big companies like WWE are not going to be able to slide by and just be like, here's what we give you, watch it, take it or leave it. And they got to hope that the numbers that they're drawing in terms of viewership are enough to justify existing when it comes to being on a network like Fox or, you know, everything else. Same with UFC. So, you know, this, I feel like, and I hope that in this next 1 or 2 years that we get to that point where people actually viewing this stuff matters. DAZN, that's going to be interesting. We kind of heard a little bit rumblings about the whole, you know, viewership for Canelo and subscriptions and everything like that. So, you know, this money is coming from seemingly out of the sky to buy all these rights. But the key part of the equation is you got to have people paying to watch them. And I am wondering about everything, you know. And I was listening to a podcast earlier talking about, it was a media podcast, and they were concerned about, you know, whether the Tiger Phil Mickelson golf tournament, the pay-per-view debacle because of all the technical issues, which is, it's surprising still in 2018, a company like BR Live is having issues with this. That, you know, maybe this opens up the door for more sports to go for pay-per-view. You know, don't forget that all of us at some point, we have only X amount of money that we can spend on things like this. And at some point people are going to be like, huh, I'm spending this on this, this on this, this on this, this on this. Do I even need this? Am I watching it all? Am I, you know, justifying this purchase? Like, why am I buying this? So, you know, push back and demand that these content providers like UFC, like Bellator, like WWE are giving you what you want. And, you know, the other night, Bellator, I think that this is Friday, the tribute to the troop show that they did. There was just like, I think there was two fights in the first hour or 2 hours or something like that, or three fights. It was just excruciating. I know they were doing all these video packages and everything like that, but you know, sometimes you just want to watch fights, especially when it's like 11:30 at night, East Coast time. And you just want to like get on with it. And you realize that the main event's not going to come on until like 1 a.m. It's frustrating. And it just, we get to push back as consumers. So my hope for the year ahead is that the consumer of combat sports pushes back and is like, enough's enough. Enough with the fluff, enough with the bullshit. Let's get into it. That's my hope. That's my hope for all of you. So I'll get off my soapbox now. And let's see. Big thanks to people that have given praise for the last few shows I've done. The Year in Review show, part one, with Paul Fontaine. We did looking at January, February, March in the world of MMA. And then also my look at kind of a, I can't remember what I titled it, A Night in the Indies, or look at the state of the Indies, or kind of like what it takes to run an indie wrestling promotion in 2018. I've done a terrible job at plugging that show, by the way. I got to do a little bit more of that. But with Limitless Wrestling owner Randy Carver, heard a lot of great feedback on that. So I appreciate that. And I may do a few more of those coming up in the year ahead with organizations at different parts of their life cycle. So look for that in 2019 and beyond. And with all that being said, my voice is toast. I'm good. The big thanks to Guy Evans. Thanks to all of you for listening. You have a lot of choices in your podcast day and podcast week and podcast month. And I greatly appreciate the time you spend with me or any of our great podcasters here in the Wrestling Observer Figure Four Online Empire Podcast Network. So I'm Josh Nason. This has been Josh Nason's Punch Out. Until next time, happy holidays. Insert catchphrase here.